Disasters are a reality of life in the Pacific, but so is the strength and resilience of its people. Pacific Prepared shares first-hand stories from communities on the ground, drawing on tradition, culture, and collective wisdom to stay safe and support one another in times of disaster. Pacific Prepared explores how communities are adapting and protecting what matters most. Search up ABC Pacific Prepared to listen online or find it wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an ABC podcast.
ABC Radio Australia. You're listening to Fresh Off the Field. Uniting the Pacific through the universal language of sports.
Hello, Aketa, and welcome to Fresh Off the Field, the sporting pulse of the Pacific. My name is Sam Wykes, and this show is all about keeping you across all things Pacifica sport. So let's not waste any time and get to what's coming up on the show. You'll meet Kathy Nia, PNG NRL's country manager.
So educating them to be better people. So when you are a better person, there are more greater chances of you representing, like making the NRL team or the Chiefs team, or also you have a better chances of becoming successful in your education as well.
You'll also meet Sione Fine Fuyaki, another former NRL player who's doing great work in the community in the beautiful kingdom of Tonga.
And I'm always one to give back to the community in some way. But when back in 2017, that was when I first started with the sports and actually see the need of the community. And that's how I restructured the whole foundation to start from the grassroots and helping the community.
We'll also talk through massive news in the world's athletics, cricket, football, basketball. And of course, we'll touch on the origin that happened last night, because I know there is a blue supporter and a maroon supporter with in our host today. I can see them smiling through my screens right now. So let's get to my co-host, who's going to give me some help with today's show. We have Jamie Huddle from PNG and Melissa Fare. She's in Adelaide, but from Vanuatu. And here they are joining us. Ladies, Jamie, I'll start with you, New South Wales fan. You must be pretty happy.
Hello. First of all, hello, Getabula. Oh my gosh, what a day it is. Blue skies out here in Port Moresby. So, yeah, really happy that the New South Wales won last night.
And how were you, I guess, 20 minutes into the game, though, or that first half? Did you have that same type of optimism that you do now?
To be honest, when you have the first 20 minutes of the game, it's just the start. Get too excited if you're leading in the first quarter. So I didn't have that much excitement. I was just watching the game, knowing that something might happen. And then eventually it did.
You said you needed you're going to be honest, and I feel like you're not honest with that answer. There's no chance that you were calm and you thought, oh, yeah, it's only the first 20 minutes. No chance. I refuse to believe it. But let's get to you, Jamie. I mean, you, Mel, Queensland supporter.
Look, I don't have a TV at home. I don't watch, but I 100% watched the highlights, because my friends were giving me so much chat after the game, because there's probably only two of us here that support Queensland, actually. Majority of our friends, the Tongans, the Samoans, they all support the Blues. And so they were giving me so much chat last night. So I had to go back and watch what happened. And as an athlete, one of the things that I just hate is late wins, like being dominant throughout the game and then losing very, very late in the game.
I hate that
so much.
Why is that? That's just part of the contest.
So much.
That's part of the contest.
No,
you've got to be
Sam.
Good for the whole amount of time if you're going to get the win, especially at that level. So it is what it is, the highs and lows.
That's why.
The highs and lows. It's probably a good thing you don't have a TV then, so you didn't get too angry and break the TV. But all good. That's our origin chat out of the way, because we've got plenty more to get through.
Fresh off the field. Sporting Pulse of the Pacific. ABC Radio Australia.
All right, it's time to get onto the big bowl. The big bowl is where we come together, we take a seat on the mat and chat the biggest sports stories across the Pacific. So sit back, fill your cup up as myself, Jamie and Mel run through the must-know sports news in the region.
The big bowl.
Yes, Jamie, we'll start with you. I believe that we've got some records here at the Oceania Athletics Championships in Darwin.
Yep, big news for Athletics PNG. Having broken two very important records at the Oceania Athletics Championship in Darwin, Australia last week. Athletics team delivered an electric performance, which saw that two national record and a lot of best personal best performance. And leading the way was Lafona Gerga, our top javelin. And he broke his own record for the 10th time and the first ever javelin to reach over 17 meters when he broke that record. Now, on the other hand, the men's 4x100-meter relay team, now they set a new national record of 4x100 relay by 40.17 seconds. And that's an improved performance from the previous national record, which was broken in Palau last year. Another outstanding performance was from our 800-meter mid-distance runner, Jitos Robinson, who competed really well with more experienced Australia athletes and was rewarded with a massive personal best. And apart from, it was a team made up of mostly male athletes, but we had one young female sprinter, Hepzibah Romelus, who made a breakthrough in the 100-meter. And also, before I finish off, I just want to give a massive shout-out to our master sprinter, Rachel Lane, who picked up two gold medals in the women's 60-plus, 60-meter and 100-meter finals during the Oceania Masters Champ, which ran in the same event in Australia. So massive shout-out and good results for Papua New Guinea.
Yeah, huge results there for Papua New Guinea, breaking a fair few records there. Mel, I know you've got some athletics news as well, and we'll have a big discussion around the athletics because it seems like there was not only PNG, I know Tonga had some success too with breaking a couple of records. We've just seen in the mixed 4x400 meters, the Tonga's under-20s team, and the they broke the open and under-20s mixed 4x400 meter record with a time of 3 minutes 44 seconds. So plenty happening there in the world of athletics.
Sam, you're staying on Tonga as well. You know, just looking outside of the track races, you also have Tonga Atatu Tafaifa from Tonga, who finished second as well in the women's shot put. So in the field events as well, there were some really good results there. So silver for Tonga in the women's shot put, and then also there is also the para events that were happening in that tournament as well. So Papua New Guinea also secured some medals in that, and I know that Vanuatu definitely reached the podium with Lufu Levusakope with silver. Vanuatu came away with two medals. One is the under-20s 100-meter sprint, and that's Chloe David from Vanuatu. Claudie David from Vanuatu, sorry, two sisters, Chloe and Claudie, are both sprinting for Vanuatu. Very proud parents who were there as well to support them, but Claudie won the under-20s 100-meter sprint. Tonga also added, obviously, their gold medals in the 400-meter hurdles and the shot put, and those are some of the other Pacific results. Fiji as well was Fiji did really well. They were also one of the standout teams in the under-20s tournament. They secured gold in the 4x400 meters relay, and also in the 4x400 meters relay as well. And I know that the under-16s was also happening in the Masters, and I don't know why I thought the Masters was happening at a different date, because I actually really enjoy watching the Masters, but I thought
the
it was
Masters,
happening
now. So what was the Masters?
The Oceania Athletics, the Masters. So the Masters is like an open category for you don't have to be a professional athlete to compete in that category as well. Yeah. So I actually quite enjoyed it. I think 2 years or 3 years ago, you had a 70-year-old competing as well. So it's kind of open to people from different Pacific Island countries, but I'm very disappointed that I did not look at the Masters, because the results are usually very enlightening, but hopefully somebody checks it out and people go and check out that result.
I didn't know that. When you're talking about the Masters, I thought you were talking about, is there a golf tournament happening there at Darwin as well? Have I missed this? But so it's
no,
an open age category.
Yes, you've got under-16s, you've got under-20s, and then you've got the seniors, and you've got the paras, and then you've got the Masters, which is like former athletes, regular people that train for it and want to compete. You can compete in the Masters.
Okay, cool. And just staying on that, like, so what's been the most impressive one you've watched in your time of seeing the Masters?
70-year-old, I forgot what he did, but he ran track. And it was so entertaining because they're usually just there for fitness, for fun. It's so much fun. But I will not forget, 70-year-old competing in track. I forgot what track event it was, but just fun. Complete fun, but also very impressive.
Yeah, I was going to say, how was the technique?
Like that,
yeah,
Sam.
At 70 years of age,
run like that.
Holy, so like it's you know, the technique was all good and got to the end fine.
Got to the end pretty fine. Like he looks like he could run a marathon and be fine. I could barely run a half marathon. I can tell you that for free.
There you go. Not all heroes wear capes. I love those type of stories. They're the feel good stories that I love. Perfect. You know, obviously plenty of happening in the Oceania Athletics in Darwin. Great to see some records being broken. Preparation begins for, you know, Commonwealth Games coming up, and also plenty of other events happening around the world. So our track stars and our field stars, keep up the good work. But now we're going to get to a story. This will be an interview that I did with Sione Finifuyaki, who is the founder of Sione's Foundation. Have you girls come across Sione's Foundation, his work before? I made this name up for him. I just say he's like the Tongan Rock. He's the Tongan version of the Rock for us. Massive human, big, bald Tongan man. Yeah, and doing some amazing work.
I think we talked about it on the show, Sam. You introduced me to him on the show, I think, in February.
Ah, there you go.
Really great stories from him, yeah.
Mate, so yeah. Him and his foundation, again, no qualifications around any type of work that he's been doing, just pure passion.
Yeah.
So, like, his foundation has helped build a disability centre, evacuation centre. What else has he done? Clean water treatment plant in Elwes to make sure that there's actually clean drinking water for people to have. So all the luxuries that I guess we can take for granted sometimes, so especially where I'm living, you know, and making sure that, you know, the people in Tonga have the same access to, you know, the basic needs of life. And the vision was sport first, but he realized that you can't have the on-field success or have those clinics if we can't get the basic needs right. So they had to build the infrastructure first. So healthy living, healthy lifestyle, but also sustainable places where, okay, I can turn on the tap and get some water. We can have a meeting room to discuss ideas to then be able to have the on-field success. So that's where it sort of changed for him. And when I look at what his sort of vision is and his mission statement, it's like providing the Tongan community and its children with the opportunity through access to physical and mental health resources and education. So the resources bit leads to the physical outcomes of sport. And just listening to his passion and what he wants to do and what he wants to achieve, it always brings a big smile to my face. So let's have a listen to Sione Finifuyaki.
ABC Radio Australia. Fresh off the field. Feel the power of Pacific sports.
Joining us on Fresh Off the Field, we have Sione Finifuyaki, who is the founder of Sione's Foundations, and they are doing some incredible work in Tonga. They've built an evacuation centre, clean water treatment plant in Elwa, a disability centre, and they have plenty more projects in the pipeline. He's a former NRL player with the Manly Sea Eagles, goes by the nickname of the Tongan Rock. I just threw that in there. I'm sure you'd love that. But he joins us now along with one of his partners, Damien Ray, who is also one of the brains of Sione's Foundation. Thanks, lads, for joining us. How are we?
Good, mate. How are you?
All good. Tongan Rock, how are you going?
I'm going good, thank you.
Look, you're not even denying it. You know that's what you like to go by, don't you? The Rock, as in you're the Tongan version. The big man, how good. But Sione's Foundation, obviously we crossed paths, I think it was back in 2021 or 2022, just after COVID. And what started off with, I guess, a dream and wanted to help out somewhere has now grown into a pretty, an amazing foundation with full-time staff members. Sione, like from where you started to where you are now, like how much has that grown?
To be honest with you, I didn't even think that it's going to be where we're sitting at today, what I was planning for. But as you know, the driven from my passion about helping the community from my sports background, and yeah, just going from there, from the sports to doing infrastructure, and you, like you mentioned before,
water treatment as well, building a whole new evacuation center for the people. It's just the totally different skill set and totally different hats that you put every day. And fortunately enough, I have my number one support here. Is call him as our project manager, because that's his background as well for the infrastructure, Damien Ray. And it's just, it's good to actually have someone have the same passion with me, to actually side by side and actually share the journey with.
We're gonna get to Damien in a sec, because obviously he's the qualified one that makes sure everything's still standing long after it's all built. You started off, you're playing footy, you moved from Tonga, played some footy, security guard in Newcastle, and now you're looking after and raising funds for projects. How does a guy go from not having, I guess, the so-called experience and qualifications to get all this up and running, to pretty much being the head figure of looking after all these amazing projects?
Don't know how that happened, but I think the passion, to be honest with you, just the passion with me, just being grown, born and raised in Tonga, 17 years old, finished high school and left Tonga, same as all the Pacific Islander looking for opportunity. And I was just in the right place in the right time to be able to pick up by the Roosters, Arthur Bitson, to come to Australia and play and be able to be play professional for 8 years with the Roosters, Melbourne, Manly, and finish up in Newcastle Knights. And that's where I base it now. And after the career and work, 8 jobs to be able to put a roof on top of my kids and put table food on the table for the kids. And actually, and I'm always one to give back to the community in some way. But when back in 2017, that was when I first started with the sports and actually see the need of the community. And that's how I restructured the whole community, the whole foundation to start from the grassroots and helping the community from there.
Yeah, nice. And yourself, Damien, I'm assuming you got the call up the same way I got the call up to MC one of his functions. It's like, hey, bro, can you do this?
Yeah.
And then you couldn't say no because of how big he is and that smile.
There's a sense of unrest when someone as big as he does rings up and giggles.
And he smiles at you like that. He just giggles and just nods. Yeah, and you go, fine, okay.
Yeah, you have to agree. Yeah.
But before yourself, mate, how much have you grown into the role and finding that same amount of passion that Sione has for his community in Tonga, someone who's not Tongan, but how have you found that sense of passion and purpose by being with Sione's foundation?
I think when you remove yourself from what's comfortable and put yourself in a community where, the smallest things that you take for granted come with a lot of appreciation and they're not overlooked, to get sort of people to be involved in that it makes it a lot easier because you see what you're doing has a massive impact. Sort of even the infrastructure that we build, we always base it around the community, what the greater community needs. So we put together an evacuation center, but there's a sporting field and a basketball court and a kids playground and all accompany that, so the community get a lot more out of it than just the building itself. And that's the point of difference that I find between what Sione's created a lot of the other players out there, is that background that he has and that work that he put in those early days to make sure it stayed connected to Tonga. That makes it, that point of difference that sort of wrote me in and kept me here.
Sports is always a vehicle for change. And what I love about what you guys are doing, obviously the vision, Sione, was about sports first and clinics, and you can do all that, healthy living. But you've realised along the way that you need facilities to be able to sustain and achieve those social changes through sport. So if you don't have clean drinking water, how can you look after yourself on the sporting field? If you don't have a place where you can actually play on the field, like a basketball court or a building, to have a meeting and have people come in and come up with types of ideas, well, then you don't get the on-field stuff as well. So when you changed your thought process around, okay, let's build the facilities first and all the stuff that matter to then get us the outcome later on the sporting field, like how was that process for you, knowing that you probably had to, you know, change tactics a little bit from the sports clinics to go, no, we actually need to build more meaningful stuff that helps everyone out?
I think it's the whole engagement with the community was the biggest things for us as a social license for the people and building that trust. You're not just only there for the talent kids. You're actually there for their everyday need. And seeing that they're giving that needs, whatever you do after that, they know it's come from the good heart to actually impacting them that way. And yeah, and like I said, just learning every day about just moving from Tonga as a 17 years old, I didn't really know how good it was back in the island until I came overseas and go back and actually see what they got. It's actually it's a beautiful country, the culture and everything. It's just giving them just changing their mindset to be sustainable, you know, like because they've been growing up, they live day by day, yeah. You know, and just thinking about what is the short-term plan and what is the long-term plan into it as well. So, and explain why you do it that way and explain what is the benefit of the long-term. And yeah, like I said, being grateful for all the organizations that have been helping us from day one and individually, like yourself as well as Damien sitting next to me and everyone that actually listened to us and giving their little one cent that helping us to where we are today. Like I said, I can't thank enough and very grateful for. And I'm still learning every day and every time I go to Tonga, even our last trip was only last week. I'm still learning every day just how they operate, how their mindset and how their mindset thinking and what they're looking at things. And yeah, just making sure that actually we stay aligned with our purpose. Our purpose, of course, the people that need our help. And yeah, just working what is the best solution to and sustainable moving forward with them as well. Yeah.
Damo, clean drinking water, turned on a tap here in Australia and we get to drink out of a tap straight away. It's something that you don't realise how important it is just to be able to have that luxury of drinking clean water. And then I remember seeing the presentation at Elwa and just looking at the colour of the water in that clear drink bottle, like going, wow, like it was brown pretty much, the water there. And so obviously I've got no doubt the logistical challenges of getting all that set up and doing it, but the end of it, the completion of it and seeing some clear water there, yeah, how did that make you feel knowing that you were part of something special that actually saved lives?
Oh, mate, I actually went back. It was a four-week deployment. I was only supposed to be there for the first 2 weeks. I came home for a week and there was just this urge to go back to see it out. It's such a staple that we take for granted. You turn the tap on, you can stick your mouth under it and take a big drink of water. When we got there, the problem that they had was, you know, the water coming through. If it rained, it would be milky and brown for 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. Problem was, most of the year it rains every second day in Tonga. So, you know, and it's also a scary thought relating it back to the sports programs and the youth over there. It's a bit of a scary thought to think, you know, there's 100,000 people in Tonga. There's so much talent on tap there and so much passion that, you know, if we're able to improve the water quality and the food quality of these kids, it's a scary thought to think what their teams might look like in the future as well.
It's a valid point, you know. Like, obviously, this is a sports show, and we're talking a bit about, getting clean water, but it's so important for preparation and just being able to move freely when you're hydrated. And it's such an important part that we have clean drinking water for people on the islands. And then finally, what's next in the pipeline, the project? Like, I'm looking at, you know, Dil Faiva Stadium. When is there going to be an upgrade to the stadium or something where we can see, you know, I know the test team plays there, but just so we can get some more tier one games over in Tonga, because I just feel like it's something that is needed. I'd love to see the Wallabies go over there and play like an actual proper fixture, or the All Blacks, or the Tonga Samoa game over there under lights, under proper infrastructure, and having all that. Like, is there something like that in the pipeline?
Yes, definitely, because our current project, I'll talk about that before leading in. Our current project is a farmer project for His Majesty, and we're talking about water, we're talking about the quality of the food, because the importing for the meat imported in Tonga is 98%. And of course, we got a request from His Majesty last year, in December last year, that if we can be able to. Now we're going from building infrastructure to a farmer.
The Tongan farmer.
And there's two different page of the project. We are setting up from scratch dairy farm for milking for the kids, and we are actually putting a program that we're gonna deliver like a 400 mil of milk, a fresh milk, to all the school in Tonga for the kids when it's actually running. And the other project is actually a dairy a farmer for meat in Tonga as well. That is our current project, and we're talking about imagine how good they are now. Imagine when they're having fresh clean water, and they're having a healthy milk and healthy meat, and how good they are in the future. And that's our current project, and that will be going into next year. That's why I'm thinking about the sports after next year, 2028. And like I said, it's a good infrastructure in Tonga, and like I said, Tonga is small enough. Because a lot of people reach out to me and said, "Oh, can you build this for us? Can you build?" And I said, "We need to collaborate in a one hub to actually help each other, because it's a lot of infrastructure there is sitting by itself and not even running properly. Mm. We need to collaborate, everyone in sports. And even Te Whaiwa, the stadium, it's actually just renovate the place and build it properly." To actually, that is sustainable, and actually upskilling those people to actually look after it, and actually running the program in Tonga with all the sports in Tonga with the good people that actually knowing what they're doing, and having the same purpose to helping the, not helping themselves, to helping the system and helping the sports and the kids first. And having the right program for the grassroots in there to come up with the, and as you can see, the athletics, when they're having the school athletics, where they're going from there is after that is nothing, you know, until the South mini game and all that, and you got the rugby, the school rugby tournament, and there is no, it's not really a system that actually continues for the kids, so they can drive for. It's a go and stop and go and stop. It's nothing sustainable ongoing. And that's what we are looking at in between now until we get to the 2028, or we'll come up with, of course, I'll be talking to you, talking to all the people that have been involved with sports and stuff like that, so we can be able to come up with the best solution for Tonga and the Pacific moving forward.
Man, awesome work. I love your work. And you're right, you build all these little ecosystems around the sustainability side of things, and then the flashy new stuff comes up off the back of making sure you're ready for it, not going the other way around, where you can have all the infrastructure and all that, I mean the stadium, but if no one knows how to look after it and service those facilities, well, it's just going to be broken and it'll just be left there, and no, it'll be no good to anyone. But lads, I really appreciate your time. It was very informative. Keep doing the good work, and hopefully we can cross paths again soon over in the beautiful kingdom. And Damo, I can finally swing a hammer, mate, so I'll be good this time around. No, I'm only joking. I still can't. I'll go get the coffees, all right? All good. Appreciate it, boys. Take care until we touch base again. Laters.
Thank you for having us.
You'll hear from Jamie and her interview a little bit later in the show, but for now, let's hop aboard the Fresh Off the Field Va'a and do this.
island hopping.
All right, let's grab the paddles and go for a little island hop. I know that we have improved over the weeks in getting this right with our paddle and understanding what this is about. So I'm glad we finally got there in the end. But we will start with you, Jamie. First up, we have got some football news.
Oh, yeah. So we're going all the way to New Zealand where the first OFC Pro League season started and concluded over the weekend. And we have some good news for footballers in the Pacific. Vanuatu United FC reached the highest rank in the inaugural OFC Pro League, obviously finishing in the semifinals. But the overall tournament saw Auckland FC win against South Melbourne.
And Auckland FC are the champions. The OFC Pro League has been won by Auckland FC. They have won the final 2-1 over South Melbourne.
Your 2026 OFC Pro League champions, Auckland FC.
It was a really good finals, semifinals and finals weekend. But all eyes were on, all eyes were on the finals. None of us could not forget the first ever goal scored to make history in this professional league. Obviously, when you someone asks who scored the first ever goal in OFC Pro League's history, everyone will be like, oh, that guy from Vanuatu United FC. And when you talk about Vanuatu United FC, the number 7 jersey comes in mind, and that's obviously Alex Sanyal.
Oh, and it's gone in! And it's the first goal in the OFC Pro League goes to Vanuatu United. Great goal by Alex Sanyal. And what a moment for Vanuatu United and Alex Sanyal. His name is in the history books.
Alex Sanyal scoring that won the Golden Boot for scoring 7 goals throughout the whole season. The first ever goal registered in OFC Pro League history, and also the fastest goal, especially against the Bulla FC in their round one fixture in New Zealand. So him winning that Golden Boot means a lot. We have a lot of good, powerful strikers here in the Pacific, and Vanuatu is leading the way. Vanuatu, you know, lead into the final four, which he scored 3 goals in the challenges group and finished 1 goal ahead of his nearest rival, which was South Melbourne FC's Jordan Swivel, so in the golden boot race. So kudos to Vanuatu United FC and congratulations to Alex Sanyal. And I'm really looking forward to seeing more action for football in the next season.
Mel, you must be pretty happy with that.
Yeah, quite happy about the result. And I know that Vanuatu social media has nonstop been talking about this, but very happy, just a bit sad for the team that they've, you know, they've gone through the challenges, have played multiple games back to back and didn't really have much time to have a break and recover before going into that semi-final, which I think would have made a lot of difference if they had some time to recover. But, you know, just getting to the semi-finals after being in the challenger with literally not really looking like they had any chance of going through, but doing that, the country's very proud, and obviously Alex as well, getting the Golden Boot is a pretty big achievement.
It's been more than 200 years since missionaries brought Christianity to the Pacific. But since then, the region has grown into a rich blend of diverse faiths, beliefs and philosophies. Pacific Soul delves into these topics and asks the question, what do we truly believe? Join your host Melissa Makin for an insightful talanoa on faith, belief and spirituality on Pacific Soul. Sunday mornings at 8 a.m. PNG time on ABC Radio Australia or where you get your podcasts.
All right, Mel, it's time for you to grab the paddle, and I believe we have some T20 news.
We do, and I am taking us all the way to Japan to talk
still in
about
Japan.
The
still
ICC.
In Japan.
Still in Japan. The last time I was here, I took us to Japan, and I'm taking us there again. I had to come back for uni, but I'm taking us back there because I got big muscles
for it. Love it.
But no, I remember the last time we were here as well, we talked about the sort of the format of the tournament, and, you know, if you lose your first 2 games in your groups, you sit out for the rest of the tournament for about a week of no cricket. But the teams that made it through to the Super 6 round were Samoa and Indonesia, Papua New Guinea and Japan. Vanuatu as well, and Cook Islands, who made it into the Super 6 stage of the tournament. And then at the end of the Super 6 stage of the tournament, whoever was top of the table won the tournament, and that was Papua New Guinea, having played 5 games and winning 4 out of those games. They won on net run rate, which is like the average, if you talk about, probably average if you talk about some other sports, but on net run rate, they just won the tournament above Japan, because Japan has also played 5 games and won 4 of those games. But PNG finished top of the table, meaning that they've won the tournament and they've qualified for the next stage of the T20 World Cup qualifiers. And Japan is runner-up as well. However, we are not sure how many teams are actually qualifying after PNG, if there will be the other, if there will be any more teams that will be going through to the qualifiers as well. So we're waiting for that. But in looking at the table, if 3 teams are going through, that would be Papua New Guinea, Japan, and Samoa. Samoa had a great tournament as well. They were pretty charismatic. I strongly encourage people to go and watch the highlights. It is very entertaining. But Papua New Guinea, Japan, Samoa is 3rd, and then Cook Islands finished 4th, Vanuatu finished 5th, and Indonesia finishing in 6th place. But look, great tournament overall, great start for Philippines, who were first newcomers in that tournament. But Papua New Guinea, congratulations to Papua New Guinea. They've been dominating the region in this in cricket and T20 cricket, and they have made it through to the next stage of the qualifiers. And hopefully we get another Pacific team in the World Cup.
When you say entertaining, are we talking about on-field entertainment, or are you talking about like the off-field stuff?
On-field entertainment. You go watch it for the celebrations. Okay, truly go and watch the highlights for the celebrations. It is truly nothing like Pacific sport. I can tell you that, because the celebrations is just so fun.
I love it. I'll have to go check it out and make sure that we bring it up again and somewhere just on on here on Fresh Off the Field, because yeah, I think there's no other people that can celebrate victories like people from the Pacific Islands, that's for sure.
I agree.
And now, Jamie, we're going to go back to you. The 3x3 High Performance Camp that's been happening in Australia, how's that going?
Yeah, the Oceania Trek Street Development Pathway, like, you know, it's been setting a big standard for aspiring basketball players, especially those who are transitioning from 5x5 to Trek Street. And this camp, the team left earlier last, especially from Papua New Guinea, 4 athletes left for the Trek Street camp just early this week or over the weekend to attend. So they amount a total of 20 female athletes and 10 coaches and 7 referees from across the region through FIBA Oceania support with Pacific All Sports, from Pacific All Sports, Olympic Solidarity and Commonwealth Sport, as well as Griffith University that's currently hosting this. Athletes and coaches, as well as referees. Now, the camp the high performance camp is strategically to strengthen the high performance pathways, expanding their talent base and elevating the standard of play across all regions. So, those athletes who attend it, I bet they're actually learning a lot of things both on and off the court, because it's very valuable with the type of training that they're going through. Now, these athletes are from Fiji, PNG, Tonga, Solomon Islands, as well as New Caledonia, who assembled for 5 days of intensive on-court training, as well as physical preparations and education sessions designed for performance in this sport. As well as that, apart from the athletes, we had the coaches from those nations, including Vanuatu. Vanuatu's 3x3 basketball is also on the rise, as well as Kiribati, and they participated in the coaching stream, development stream, and referees from PNG, Fiji, Vanuatu, and Kiribati, Solomon Islands, as well as Palau, undertook targeted officiating workshops to match player assessments. Now, it means a lot especially for the 3 other country participants, especially athletes from PNG, Tonga, and Fiji, the female athletes, given that they've qualified for the Commonwealth Games. So it's very important. From Papua New Guinea, the last team that went to Palau, only two of them made the four women's squad team for the high performance camp. So it is very critical and important for them to learn as much as they can and prepare for the Commonwealth Games, which is like just weeks away for Scotland. Yeah.
Perfect, perfect. Well, ladies, we've had a great paddle. We've travelled around the Pacific, got through plenty of news, so thanks for bringing them in. It's now time to get to our second interview.
ABC Radio Australia. Fresh off the field. Feel the power of Pacific sports.
All right, Jamie, we're going to talk to Kathy Niap. She is a former dual code athlete and PNG NRL's country manager. Firstly, how did this interview come about?
So to be honest, I'm currently attending a sports commentary and gender equality workshop with the ABC right now, with Dr. Kate O'Loren. I hope I pronounced the name properly. I haven't read her surname. I just go by Dr. Kate, as well as the commentary trainer, ABC commentary trainer, Peter Lonman. So through that session, they were able to invite her over, and I saw it as an opportunity to interview her, given the type of job she runs to promote women's sport, especially rugby league here in Papua New Guinea. Now, before becoming a country manager in Papua New Guinea for PNG NRL, she was a former PNG Sevens player or PNG Palais player, and she became the first PNG Orchid, or Orchid number one, and captain to lead our women's team in the first debut or first appearance in the Rugby League World Cup in 2017. So I asked her, apart from that, she actually holds another role as well. She's a coach for one of our semi-professional teams here in PNG for the Women's Intercity Cup. So I asked her about the recent transition to a new role, and this is what she said.
My current role with the NRL in PNG is the NRL in PNG manager. So I manage our four programs, our four regions, so Goroka, Kokopo, Lae, and Port Moresby. So we have certain deliverable activities. So we have legal and life in schools, girls' fun days, community clinics, inclusive programs with special need schools, and our female capacity building program. So I currently manage all those to make sure our staffs from all the regions, they deliver those activities.
Can you elaborate on the sport for development programs which you just mentioned and how it creates an impact for aspiring rugby league players here in the country?
Our sports for development program is all about creating better people. So better people in communities. So basically, social behavioral changes, educating them about, you know, why respect is important, and also educating them about being inclusive in their decision making. Involving people with special needs is very important, and also gender equality. They're able to realize that girls are equal to boys, and they have the right to become doctor, accountant, the rugby player, whoever they want to be. But education is always a priority in life. So educating them to be better people. So when you are a better person, there are more greater chances of you representing, like making the NRL team or the Chiefs team, or also you have a better chances of becoming successful in your education as well.
As one of the pioneer women of rugby league here in Papua New Guinea, what can you say about the rise of women's rugby at this point?
The rise of women's rugby league. Women's rugby league has grown. In 2017, it has grown, like the interest has boomed. The equal support that PNG Rugby League is giving to women in today's game has boosted the participation also. The game has become more safer for women to take part in.
With the women's semi-professional rugby league comp on the rise, this creates an opportunity for our women to have a go in the national team. You, as a coach for one of those semi-professional teams, what do you think of the impact it has on women?
The impact it has on women is creating the platform where ladies will be being exposed to training at the elite space, with also more, being more knowledgeable about the game. Also with the technology to also technology support, as in, you know, having the access to video coaching and having to watch their own game and analyze it. And all that will be really improving the women's game from what it used to be.
Other than the role you have for PNG in NRL or NRL PNG, you also coached the Dabaris to win their first semi-professional comp last year. How was the feeling like wearing multiple caps as a former player and now a coach, apart from the professional role you have?
It's something that I'm also proud of, being one of the Santos Cup coaches and appeared 2 times in grand final and winning the second one. It's something that I'm proud of, proving that women, we can coach as well as everyone else. So it's not only for myself, but, you know, this is a fight for all women, proving to all the males out there that, you know, we women can coach too. And also this paves the way for our young women wanting, aspiring to be coaching, aspiring to be training and be leaders and administration of the game. We're setting that example where, you know, if she can do it, I can do it as well.
You were the first PNG Orchids captain to lead the team to the 2017 World Cup. 9 years after, and we'll be seeing PNG host another World Cup. What is your take on PNG Orchids returning to play on home soil?
I never got the chance to play World Cup in PNG, but yeah, it's gonna be really inspiring to see our women play on oil soil, and not just a championship, but the World Cup. So yeah, it's very inspirational to all the young girls who will be coming and watching this World Cup. I'm sure this will be a boost in our domestic competitions as well, and the number is surely going to triple or double.
Last question, what is your message to young girls and women who aspire to reach full potential in the rugby league dream?
My education or my message to them is for them, I think self-discipline is something that is really important. So they have to discipline themselves to work hard, especially if they want to get fit. All those things have to be done outside of that 1 hour training time. So them committing to staying disciplined, to working hard, and by eating right food, sleeping on time, and doing their own training, they have to work hard to get to the highest level on their own, instead of waiting for the usual 1 hour training time in the afternoon.
Yes, you're listening to Fresh Off the Field with me, Sam Wykes, and thank you so much for that chat with Cathy Kneeap. Jamie, amazing, amazing and important role that she's got over there in PNG. You know, when you think about, you know, the importance of development and the rise of women participating in PNG around rugby league, what's probably one area where you think there's still a lot of work where it needs to be done?
I guess we need to do more advocacy awareness on, you know, trying to educate our people, because a lot of people still rely on our traditional values and norms or custom that women don't belong in the rugby field. But this generation has changed, and a lot of things has changed, and we now see the rise of women's sport, and especially having a semi-professional competition for women here in Papua New Guinea to actually showcase the talent in rugby league.
Yeah, perfect, perfect. Thank you for that, Jamie. All right, now it's time for us to have a little bit of fun.
Fresh off the dome.
Yeah, fresh off the dome. Every week I'll ask 3 questions. Jamie and Mel, they'll use their name as a buzzer. And if you think you know the answer, you can play along at home as well. Ladies, are we ready to go?
Set,
ready to go. All right, question number one. Minor Pacifica will play the final time this Saturday. At least, hopefully there is more to come, but at least for the time being, this is the last game. So there's no immediate plans to save the Super Rugby Pacific franchise in the short term, but hopefully there is. But their farewell is in Canberra this weekend with their match against the Brumbies. Who will captain Moana Pacifica in their final game? Is it A, Patrick Pellegrini, B, Miracle Failangi, and C, Augustine Bulu? This could be a trick question, but it might not be. I'm just throwing it out there. If you haven't already seen the team list,
Jamie.
All right, Jamie.
To be honest, I haven't read the recent updates on Moana Pacifica, but my gut tells me that I'm still going to go with Miracle Failangi. Dancers Miracle Failangi.
And that is correct. I tried to throw you off there a little bit just because I thought it was too easy. But I thought I'll just throw a little curveball in there just to make sure. But it is the great man, Miracle Failangi. Hopefully not leading Moana Pacifica out for the very last time this Saturday against the Brumbies. But let's get to question number two. Where in the world is Valladolid? And there's a bonus point up for grabs too. What's happening in this city this weekend? I'm after the country. The clue, it is in Europe.
Oh, my God.
Can you repeat that question again?
Where in the world is Valladolid?
Wow.
Wow. Okay. I have never.
Oh, man. I couldn't even read it. So that's how good I'm going. Clue, it's in Europe.
Okay. Melissa?
Yes. I say South American.
Can I get a wait?
Yeah, okay. I'll go South American.
Is it South American if it's in Europe?
No.
You said Europe.
Yeah, did I say Europe?
I think I made the same. Could I just go Spain?
Spain. Yeah, Spain.
Yeah.
Is that it?
Because I always think Spain is in South America, yeah, so but it's not. Yeah, it's in Europe. So when you said that, I knew.
I've gone, the nearest major city is Madrid. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's South America. There we go. I'm all over it. Well, do you know what's happening there this week for a bonus point?
No, I don't.
It's the Rugby Sevens event is on this weekend. So there we go. That's why that question was in there. But yeah, man, I was like, oh, what is Valladolid? How good am I going with my geography? But all good. We got there in the end. So that's a point to you, Mel, for that. All right, let's get to question number three. With the Commonwealth Games approaching, let's take a trip down memory lane to Birmingham 2022. Which island nation claim the most medals? They claim 5 total, 1 gold, 4 silver. I'll go multiple choice, actually.
Is it?
Okay. Do you want multiple choice?
Yes, please.
Okay. Okay. All right. Let me go clue two first, and then I'll go multiple choice, just in case, because this clue two might give it away. 4 out of the 5 medals were won in weightlifting. Who's known for weightlifting? Obviously, haven't
Jamie.
Won. Go, Jamie. You obviously haven't been Jamie. Watching that Pacific Sports Show where we highlight this country all the time towards weightlifting. But anyway.
Yeah. I'm going with Samoa.
Jamie,
big guess.
You're on the money. It is Samoa. Yes, they. They were the nation that claimed the most medals in 2022, and I'm sure they'll be hoping to do the same thing again this year. But that's it. That's our time. What was the score there? 2-1? 2-1, at least. I still can't even say that. I still can't even say that name. Mel, what was that place? Mel, what was that
which,
place?
Which place?
That place in South America / Europe?
Spain.
Yeah,
I'll
brush up on my geography come next week. I was all over the shop. If it's not in the Pacific, I've got no idea what's going on. So
as soon as you said South America, but you said Europe before, I knew exactly which country because I make the same mistake. I used to think Spain and then South America. Man, so I
you
knew.
Go. You learn something new every day, and I'll make sure that, as I said, I'll be up with my geography in the weeks to come. But that's us for Fresh Off the Field. A big thank you to Jamie and Mel. Appreciate you jumping on. And thank you for listening to Fresh Off the Field, the sporting pulse of the Pacific on ABC Radio Australia. I'll be back next week with two new co-hosts talking all things sport in our region. And this episode was produced on the lands of the Gadigal people.
This program has been funded by the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade.